Welcome everyone to Black Coffee and Theology. Hello everyone, welcome back. I hope you all are doing well. So on today's episode, I am joined by Sharifa Stevens. And she is a writer, she's a speaker, she's a theologian. She's a wife, she's a mother, and she's just all around a great person. And on today's episode, we are talking about the show Star Trek Discovery and really zeroing in on the main character, Michael Burnham. And Michael Burnham is a Black woman and at the center of this show. And it's just a really just an awesome treat to see how this woman is, how her story unfolds throughout the seasons. And so I think you will enjoy our conversation together as we talk about some theological things, some womanist things, some fantasy things together. Yes. So before we get into this conversation, I have really enjoyed reading Dr. Shaniqua Walker Barnes' book, Too Heavy a Yoke, Black Women and the Burden of Strength, and really putting that book in conversation with thinking about and analyzing the show. And she makes this point on page 20, thinking about how Black women are depicted on screen, even in fantasy. And she says here, take, for example, the role of Whoopi Goldberg as Guinan on Star Trek The Next Generation. As a 600-year-old member of the listener race, Guinan's presence on the show was almost totally restricted to the bar of the USS Enterprise, where she serenely dispensed drinks and wisdom as she listened to the problems of the ship's officers. While dressed in a shapeless head-to-toe uniform that left only her face and hands visible, her near disembodiment was sharply contrasted by the other counselor figure on the show, Deanna Troi, played by Greek actress Martina Syrtis. Genetically gifted with heightened emotional empathy, Troi was a fully developed character with her own storylines, which included both romance and danger. Whereas Guinan, she only had one name, was a nearly stoic bartender with heightened spiritual wisdom and no life outside the bar, Troi was the ship's official counselor with a vibrant professional and personal existence. And so just thinking about the juxtaposition of these two different characters as we go into talking about the strong Black woman, Michael Burnham. Be blessed. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the pod. Hey, I am excited because the good friend, Sharifa Stevens, is here. Welcome.
Hey. Thank you for having me.
I am so happy because Sharifa has been on the Three Black Men podcast, and Sharifa is out here in these streets on other podcasts. She's a writer, poet, just out here, just doing amazing things. Incredible. She's a singer too, y'all. You gotta hear her. And so I'll say something and then I'll have you say something about yourself. I think the thing that I enjoy most about you is how you approach life with curiosity. Open curiosity is what I would say about you. And there's a wonder to that I see in you and your children, especially. And that open curiosity is so infectious. And I think that that makes you such an easy person to get along with. And even before we met for the first time, I already felt like you were family. And then when we was in the building together, we became family. I mean, we became family at a deeper level. And then just meeting your husband and your extended family, I was like, this is it. This is truly, I'm in here. I'm adopted. So truly, you are a special person, friend. And yeah, so with that said, I usually ask people to tell us something about who you are, what's important to you, and how you show up in the world.
Well, first of all, thank you. Robert knows that I am a hoarder of oxtails.
Yes.
So I would define myself that way. And I guess I am intimidated by open-ended questions because I could go in a million different directions. I think right now I am in the process of believing myself. That's what is my work right now, because I think that I've been in environments that caused me to doubt myself for decades. So just listening to the inherent wisdom, Courtney, there's a woman named Courtney who used that phrase, and I love it, that God's given me is my work right now. I would describe myself as someone who really is tethered to hope by Jesus, and otherwise I'm pretty naturally melancholy and cynical. I get my curiosity from watching my children. They have really discipled me in seeing the beauty of the world and in remaining open and tender when I don't want to. I am a romantic in not a, guess in the sense where I believe that people can be so beautiful. And so it makes my heart break that much more easily when we are not showing up that way. I think that's it. I think being a lover of who Jesus is has been incredibly challenging because he just doesn't cut people off that I would cut off. And the expansiveness of that love is, it just flies in the face of the factions that show up everywhere, including in my heart. And it to be loyal to him is to not fully belong in any kind of tribe. So I think that's it. So
I love that,
that's
friend.
it.
I love that. So many great things to sit with. I love when you introduce yourself. since the time you came on Three Black Men, I was like, I love it. And it's why I asked that open-ended question to start off with, because when people, I find the way that people answer that question helps to navigate this conversation that I have with people on this pod, and it can go from there in any direction. And it kind of just is like, oh, this is a landing space, right? And it's a beautiful navigational array. So on our time together, we are going to be illuminating a bit of science fiction. And so it will be around Star Trek Discovery.
Yes.
And so come on, nerds, unite, blurreds, you know.
Blurreds.
And specifically around the character of Michael Burnham. And let me back up a second and say, all through this season of Black Coffee and Theology, I've kind of been illuminating this theme of who is God to us now, and really sitting with, you know, the God of, you know, this, who is God to us, and who is God to, especially Black folks, but people of color, some white cousins, siblings have been on the podcast as well. But taking this conversation and then going into a fictional work is such it's such a invigorating topic, and to do it with Sharifa is awesome, because Sharifa and I and our friend Catherine, we be in the group chat.
Yes, we do.
Blurting out. And I really picked Michael Burnham because what I feel like Star Trek Discovery has done well is they've taken this Black woman who we see at the beginning of her journey, and we see this beautiful character arc. And she goes through all these different emotional phases, and they aren't stunted. We actually see full growth. And for me, as someone who studies womanism, I'm like, yo, there's like a full arc of a person. And so, yeah, so I wanted to bring that here for us to discuss. and so if you haven't seen it, I think you'll still be able to resonate with our conversation, because we're going to just bring some things out of the show just to discuss. If you have seen it, you're going to be even more invigorated, hopefully. So the first thing I will say, just for a bit of a grounding for our conversation, is around Michael Burnham. Let's start with what your thoughts were originally when you first saw the character of Michael Burnham. Like, what do you think of her? Mm-hmm. Like, how does she strike you through that first season? What were some of your thoughts?
So I want to begin with a confession, because, you know, I'm not as blurdy as other blurreds. So
it's okay. And it doesn't have to be super technical either.
Well, I want to say that in the way of the reason why I watched, the reason why I tuned in, was because I saw a Black woman on a starship. Okay. So there are, the Star Trek universe is vast, and I have not watched all of the iterations of Star Trek. I did watch the original, but this is what attracted me. I was like, this is a Black woman on a starship, and there's an Asian woman on a starship, and they on the same starship. Cause, you know, there's usually like one person in the quota, you know. Yes. It can't be more than two usually. So I, and not just as an ancillary character, but as main characters. So that is what attracted me to even turn on Star Trek Discovery. I'm such a fan of Michelle Yeoh.
Yes.
Right. So, and now I'm such a fan of Sonequa Martin Green. So I was a little reticent after the initial episode, I think it was. Ooh, feels like a while ago.
Yes.
But I thought that they were going to go in a way where it was one woman versus the other.
Yes.
And creating a really shallow enmity between these two women of color. So, and I was just like, ooh, I don't know if I can hang on. So what a pleasure it was to see how they developed iterations of that relationship that were more complex and familial. It was such a joy to see lack of cattiness among women in the script. And obviously, you know, Michael Burnham's character is a strong Black woman. You know, she knows what she's doing, and she's decisive, and she speaks truth to power. But which I expect from, I expect that as a trope. So what was really pleasurable about this experience, especially in watching her through the seasons, is that that's not all she is. It's not a flat trope of Black female strength. It's also an internal journey for her, what it is to be her, especially because she didn't see herself reflected in the culture that she grew up in. She had to learn how to adapt in the culture that she was adopted into, which is so relatable for some of us, and how to thrive in emotional spaces that were unnatural for her, and even, you know, how to shed those coping mechanisms when she was in a new space. Just so. She's, you know, earlier in the introduction, I was saying, you know, I'm learning how to listen to myself. And part of that means not having to use the filter of whatever it is that tamps down creativity, imagination, personhood, white supremacy, misogyny, spiritual oppression, all of these things that have filtered my voice, where I'm like, what is this? Is this my thinking, or is this social conditioning? And for Michael, it's, you know, she had to learn how to respect her emotional reality, her mental acuity, and wed those things together and say, this is all good. And I can relate.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you got me thinking about two different tracks that I want to go down.
Take them.
Yeah. I'm like, you hit on two different things. One, I'm thinking of, well, first, the strong Black woman trope. I'm thinking of this book, Too Heavy a Yoke, Black Women and the Burden of Strength by Dr. Yes. Shaniqua Walker-Barnes. And she has this piece in here that I was reading the other day where she says, for many women, the strong Black woman is the standard psychological defense. Donning the armor is Black women's method of suiting up for battle, preparing to defend the psyche against the attacks waged by sexism, racism, and classism. in this sense, the ideology of the strong Black woman has an important adaptive function that must not be ignored. Black women have donned the armor of the strong Black women because it has been, to a considerable extent, the most effective means available for coping with the stresses of their existence. And so she goes on to saying, like, it has worked. And so you were talking about that survival dimension, being logical, being sharp, being on it. You know, she has this unique, you know, we find for Michael, she has this unique upbringing that has made her have to be a strong Black woman, even in an alien society. So I think what's interesting is in a quote unquote enlightened time in the galaxy, she still has had to armor herself up and still has had to become that strong Black woman. And so it was so jarring to see this armored Black woman in the future still have to be disconnected from her emotions and still have to be a on-screen example of what many Black women have to be here and now.
Yeah.
It's like, wow.
This still is actually better than everybody else.
Yeah.
Still have to strive to be perfect. Still.
Yeah. And you're like, ow.
Right? You still doing this?
You're like, ow. All they did was like put a little storyline on like actual reality.
Right? We're not even on Earth anymore and we're still doing this.
You're like, put some aliens in here on regular Black women's experiences.
And then they did, and that was messy too.
Yeah. Oh, God. shout out to her love life too. And then because the struggle of Michael Burnham has went through too.
That's it.
My God on today. But I think like locating it here is seeing that adaptive armor that she's had to create has been necessary, and it has helped her all throughout her life be good enough and be perfect in the embodiment of perfection. And watching her interactions were, you know, ghostly to me as I watched it. And then you spoke about the imagination piece and her having to embrace the emotions in order to move forward throughout her life. I really am sitting with what you were saying there. And I'm thinking part of the anchor for that we can find in Alice in Wonderland. So
tell me more.
So she's growing up with this armor of having to be perfect. And we see that all throughout the, you know, her life, and kind of having to take pieces of this armor off and become vulnerable and become feeling and become open to trusting people. But part of the key to taking that off is we find that when she was a child, her adoptive white mother read to her, her adoptive mother's name was Amanda, and she would read to her the story Alice in Wonderland. And you find all throughout, sprinkled through the first and second season, whenever Michael is in a dangerous spot, or in a tenuous spot, she starts to quote pieces of this story. And she reveals to different people why at certain times. And she said, when things would get turned around, she quotes it because it let her know that logic wasn't the only thing that she needed to get out of, you know, tricky situations. And so there was a time where they're running from this alien species and they're in danger, and she starts to talk about Alice going down the rabbit hole, right? And she's quoting it almost as a mantra to get through this very stressful time. And so I'm thinking about her anchor in times of trouble wasn't only this adaptive armor that, you know, just buck up and try harder. It was, you know, the imagination of her adopted mother that anchored her to her her humanity. And I think of how beautiful in recovering her her humanity, she needed help, you know, in that, you know, and she needed the help of her imagination of this, you know, children's story in that, you know.
That's good.
And I think in that way, I think in that way, I see so much. Like seeing her begin to change, even in that first season and second season, as she went through so much persecution. I think there's a lot to unpack there, right? Like her, because, you know, she's continually like bogged down and beat down because she is one step behind everybody from this armor that she had to, utilize, but she's, so I'm just sitting with that, thinking about that.
So interesting what does end up anchoring us to, like, it's not a Vulcan scroll or some kind of heady text that does it for her. It is a children's story, and it's a story that's outside of the bounds of, you know, the normal that tethers her, that grounds her, and that helps her. It's really interesting. I mean, there are so many. I think that even though it's a fictional thing, there's some truth in just the power of art and music and fiction to bring us relief.
Yes.
And to soothe us or to redirect us to help us climb out of a grim circumstance or just to help us to recalibrate towards the what is possible and what is beautiful. There's a hope that comes from the creation and the sharing, marinating in art.
Yes.
That is so, it's just, I don't know, it's spiritual.
Yes.
And I think for her, that it was spiritual to recite these things in times of trouble.
Yes. Yeah. 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 And I think, you know, and then using that as a template, then thinking about Black women in general for a second. What are your thoughts then, you know, shifting away from just Michael, then looking at Black women? Do you see any overlap with Black women's experiences in any way? Because I will say for me, the Black women I have seen in my life, they do have, y'all do have y'all own anchors and things that do help y'all get through the misogyny, the racism, the intersections of things that of your marginalized identities. And that's why, that's what was striking to me in viewing this on screen, because, you know, it might not be, you know, this Alice in Wonderland thing, but like, do you see any overlap in whether it's your own experience or, you know, the Black women around you at all?
Well, yes. I mean, I think first, there's a generosity in a womanist worldview that is kind of, I guess you can reflect it as whatever is good, you know, we think on it, it so we're not the like Michael looking to Alice in Wonderland, even though it's not a Black woman's fiction, she's able to utilize it because whatever is good, we utilize. You know, it's like, it makes me think of quilting for some reason. Yeah. Just how we've always taken the patches of what is, the things that are around us to create something beautiful that warms us and that is our art and our heirloom and our functionality. And so, you know, I was on the interwebs this week was this weird review for a movie called Turning Red, and it is focused on an Asian 13-year-old girl living in Toronto, and the review was like, this is very narrow, it's for a certain demographic, and I found it exhausting to watch. And that's one way of looking at things. And I think Black women are really expansive in whatever is good we can take from and build from and build with because of that collective desire for flourishing. But then specifically, I just am nourished by the art of Black women who are able to speak specifically into my pain. There was a time where, I mean, I'm kind of in that time right now, Robert, where like social media is not nourishing me for these times of hypocrisy and war and selfishness. And I've been, you know, reading Octavia Butler has been so prophetic to me, because this woman had such an accurate read on our society. And there's a sceneness that I feel just reading her very much dystopian work, but the dystopia is based in reality, you know. There's, and my children, you know, I want them to hear and appreciate, and they do, the artistry of Nina Simone, for example. I feel like she was so sensitive and discerning of her lived experience here that it compelled her towards a compulsive desire to express herself through art, through her piano, through her lyrics. And I want my children to be at home with the full spectrum of our anchors as Black women. Does that make sense?
It sounds like a canon for you. Like it's a canon of anchors, and is what I
ever developing canon.
Yes,
you know, so that I can go, you know, how we are always thinking of Lucille Clifton in the times where we are celebrating our triumph, right? Despite, you know, I'm always, you know, my friends, we know Phenomenal Woman, because we just need to lift our own chins sometimes with Maya Angelou. Or even how we canonize The Color Purple, so we can like speak whole emotional ranges through what Celie said or what Miss Sophia said.
Listen.
This canonization is happening through art all the time.
But you know what that does is it does anchor you into reality. into the reality that matters for you. And I think it gives you a hope and a humanness that matters, right? And that's, you know, that's what we find in Michael Burner's character, and that's what, you know, we find for us. And you know who else that I what art that I see that in? Mary J. Blige, I think, in her music.
Yes!
Offers that, because there's something about pretty much every song that she's ever sung that when I see Black women reflect, like when I see the resounding yes, and but even she does something even for Black men that I think she names something that even Black men are afraid to say, that I think we stand on the outside afraid to like say it full chested, but there's something that resonates for us too. You know, and it reminds me of Toni Morrison's Clearing a bit.
Yeah.
You know, and we're there in that clearing too. And her music offers that for us too.
Yes.
And yeah, so Mary is speaking to Black women's pain, but there's something, the brothers are there too, like, in this clearing, this place we flesh too. You know, I know we're not supposed to be, but
are we not supposed to be,
and that's why at the end of her Super Bowl performance, when you know, when she's laid out, I actually felt a spirituality in that, truly.
Yes,
there were, I mean, I was like, I felt a collective sigh of relief.
Yes. Yes. And yeah, because she's embodied commitment to that full expression. Yeah. You can't look neutrally on the way she delivers and has delivered for decades now. Mm-hmm. You can't. I mean, you can, but what's wrong with you if you are like apathetic to the emotional journey that she is so fully committed to. Communicating with integrity with her whole self.
Yeah.
I love her.
Me too. And so Michael Burnham's character, let's talk about a bit about her evolutionary growth. You know, so she starts out at the beginning. She's presented to us as quirky, weird, as that's the vibe they're trying to pitch to us. She's got a rebellion problem. You know, she never liked being told what to do. You know, one thing about her, she gonna do what she gonna do anyway. Sit over there. Michael Burns, like, you know, the battle of the binary stars. Michael Burns, like, I'm taking over the ship, and I'm gonna beat the Klingons up. They were like, wait.
Right.
And then for all intents and purposes, she is the initiator. At least she is blamed with initiating the conflict between everyone in the Klingon War.
Yes.
Which was a bad rap. But she takes it and is essentially made into this bad sheep character and essentially wears a scarlet A for a good majority of the time.
Yes.
And so let's talk a bit about her evolution as a person, as a character. What are your thoughts on it? How she develops?
Okay, well,
I'll say I hated the scarlet A that she wore. That's my initial thought. Like, she's like literally branded with this scarlet A, and she's just like moved about as almost this indentured servant. She really was. And I hated it, and I'm glad they made me feel that. They made me feel like y'all gave this woman a bad rap.
Why are you glad about that feeling? Let's unpack that.
Oh, I think, well, one, I think in terms of like a viewership, they created tension. because it made for, like, in my blackness, I'm not glad about it, but in terms of, I see why you really made me invest in this show, because I'm glad, because I hated it. Like, I'm like, yo, bump these people and go let them all die. This is what I felt. Because we find out that Captain Lorca was really the enemy.
And it's, that's kind of real, isn't it?
Yes.
Like the being the scapegoat, the one to blame, and
mm-hmm. So this black woman is essentially blamed with all the problems of the universe. And then the white man who was the knight in shining armor turned out to be the villain.
Shock. I mean, I don't know what the majority demographics are as far as viewers are concerned, but I feel like as a subcategory, there's like us who are like, this is not a new reversal at all. This is actually snatched from the annals of history. So we could see the turn. Just like in this season, you know, like how many times are we like, yeah, he did it or she did it. We know everybody else is like, no, not that innocent, doe-eyed, toe-headed. And we're like,
Precisely.
Smells like Confederacy.
Like, really? On a galactic scale.
Right. Smells like colonialism. Smells like it. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So your thoughts on her evolution. Like, what?
I can speak on a more general scale because look, I think that. And part of it I spoke to before, I felt that she was able to break out of a very tired trope. And I was trying to hang on because, you know, one trope is the strong Black woman, one trope is the, you know, incarcerated, guilty Black body, like, and I was like, I hope her, because she's the main character of this franchise, I hope we move through these tropes, because what's next? Is she going to be a mammy, a sapphire? What's going to happen? We can't do this. So, but happily, they embraced character development and subtlety and really moved towards a sci-fi imagination that allowed her to move through time to save herself, to be rescued by her wholeness rather than rescued through like a romantic relationship, which I'm just like, good on y'all for making her grow so into herself that in a way that is salvific for her and also for everyone she surrounds without having her be a magical Negro. So yes, Robert, yes.
Listen, you are saying the things because it's a salvific piece and her wholeness and choosing herself, bringing about wholeness for others. I think her evolution, I think what we saw as, you know, she matured was she stopped trying to save everyone individually and even, you know, like I'm trying to carry everyone's weight. And she kept choosing herself little by little. And then that bringing about the greatest amount of good, you know, like what is best for me, you know, and, you know, her leaving that struggle love situation.
Man, listen.
Like putting that, bye-bye. You know, like literally putting that ashy dude to the side. Yes. And then
why did they do that to her?
Like, but no, in I think what was beautiful about that was, to your point, her salvation didn't come in a relationship. Her salvation came from, you know, I found wholeness, life in within. And you even see her countenance change as the seasons go on.
Yeah.
And it's like even the radiance and the beauty is coming from within. Like by the time season three hits, I'm like, yo, when she came out of season three, she came. I was like, yo, it's the wholeness for me.
Yes, with her smiling eyes.
I was like, it was kind, it was a warmth in her eyes where it was like, if you compare the side by sides of season one and season three, I'm like, whoa. Like she came, she was looking like when they tried to come get her in the future, she was like, hey y'all. I've been doing great. She looked like she
so tranquil.
She looked like I got my groove back, y'all. Hey. I've just been sitting by the pool. Yes. I laid down trying to rescue everybody and I rescued me, mm-hmm. is what it looked like. And mm-hmm. I love that.
Yes. Yes. There's also an interaction with, you know, it's not completely individualistic. I think
yes.
she
yes.
just laid down the
yes, 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 yes.
savior mentality. Mm-hmm. And that freed her, I think, freeing her. So she's, I don't know, it gave her, it took the weight off of her shoulders and out of her eyes. And she was able to, embrace herself. I think, you know, she was trying to imitate, Vulcan, you know, in the first season, she didn't have to do that anymore. Mm-hmm. And she was like a person who is longing for lost relationships, and that makes sense. Just a relationship with her mother that she never had, her birth mother that she didn't have. After in her formative years, and there's a mourning, there's a grief that we go through when our imaginations are in grief, where it's like, what could have been and what did we miss? And I feel like she absolutely had to go through that.
Yeah. And you notice when she went to the future, after that, she didn't quote Alice in Wonderland. She's never quoted it anymore.
No.
And I think I texted you, I said, she internalized the story. Yes. And she's never quoted it since. And so her transformation is, you know, she has been reborn into a sense. And I think the beauty in seeing the character and then this way is, you know, now without that savior complex, now she can do the highest good.
Yes.
Because she was still helping people during that time where Absolutely. She was without her career. She was trying to solve the burn. She was trying to find her crew, but it was without that heavy weight, to your point. And mm-hmm. I think again to, you know, Black women everywhere and Black men, like without that burden on our shoulders of having to save everyone, when that is lifted, how much more we can breathe, you know, like, mm-hmm. you know, and that's easier said than done, right? Like that's a simple thing to say, like, oh, just don't be worrying about people. Just like worry about yourself. It's like, okay. oh, thanks. I never thought about that.
Right. right.
Cool.
It's not that simplistic.
Right. I think part of it, she was freed up to accept the love and the freedom of community too. Because she went back a different person,
Yes.
it was able to be embraced by those people differently, the Discovery's crew.
And they had to put some respect on her name because they, she saved them. She saved the universe. I think, we have a weight on our shoulders in this real reality that's relentless because we don't have a time of reprieve. There's not been a time of like repair and reflection for us that is free of the onslaught of murder, subjugation, and big and little reminders that this country embraces white supremacy at every level. I think that's a that's also a heavy yoke that in sci-fi you could just you can just go 1,000 years into the future and have it be a safe place.
And we don't have that.
So and then have people be like, hey, you weren't what I thought you were. Yay. Just wow. That's why we have these imaginings so we can see the things that just are unseen right now.
Black Coffee and Theology Pod is a production of Three Black Men, the podcast about theology, culture, and the world around us. Follow us on Twitter at Three Black Men. If you like the content that you are receiving here and want to receive more, whether that is in longer conversations, essays, devotions, and videos from either myself, Sam, or Trey, please sign up for our Patreon at patreon.com/threeblackmen. Don't forget to like, rate, and review Black Coffee and Theology Pod, as well as Three Black Men.